All right, so there you have it. There's J.D. Vance, and you might have just heard the very first speech for his campaign outside the primary. That speech sounded like he was headed for his November message. He's the Senate primary candidate for the GOP in Ohio tonight, folks, handily beating his other opponents. And it wasn't the story like that just a few weeks ago. If you've been following J.D. Vance's campaign, and I don't know, everybody in the news media has been pretty focused on him, it was only a few weeks ago where he was kind of at the bottom of the pack, not doing so well. And then along came Donald Trump mid-April with that all-important endorsement. And up until tonight, we'd all been wondering, was Donald Trump still going to be a kingmaker? And you just saw the result. Yes. And it's not just J.D. Vance. It's the other candidates all around Ohio and Indiana as well. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Banfield. And welcome to election night, or as we like to say, Tuesday. Because from now until the end of the summer, just about all of your Tuesdays are going to be primary days in one state or another, or several states all at once. And that's because in November, the entire United States House of Representatives, 35 different Senate seats and 36 governorships are all up for grabs. And the outcome is going to set the stage for 2024 and beyond. Tonight, Ohio and Indiana are in the primary spotlight, and the marquee race of the evening, you just saw it, Ohio's GOP Senate contest. In that state, the guy you just saw, venture capitalist J.D. Vance. Yes, he's that author, the guy who wrote the famous book Hillbilly Elegy. He was able to ride that Trump endorsement to a victory in a crowded field, all of them running for the seat vacated by Senator Rob Portman. He was up against Josh Mandel, a former state treasurer, and Matt Dolan, a state senator whose family owns Cleveland's Major League Baseball team. But Trump's backing of J.D. Vance likely came as a real gut punch to Josh Mandel, and he may have only seen marginal relief just a few days ago on Sunday when Trump seemed to forget who he was backing and ended up mixing up the names of J.D. Vance and Josh Mandel just 2 days before this vote.
J.P., right? J.D. Mandel, and he's doing great. They're all doing good.
Well, it wasn't J.P. Mandel. It was J.D. Vance. He did just fine. And let's just look at the actual numbers, shall we? We'll start on the left. Matt Dolan coming in at just 22% with, I think, 72% of all the votes in tonight so far. Mike Gibbons not doing so well, 12% of the vote. Josh Mandel coming in a little bit better than Matt Dolan at 24% of the vote. And there's J.D. pulling in 31% in this field. And like I said just a few weeks ago, that was not the story. And of course, the Democrats are also voting tonight. And in the Ohio Senate primary, outgoing Congressman Tim Ryan has sailed past Morgan Harper, and he'll be the guy facing off against Vance, the GOP nominee, come this November. NewsNation's Kelly Beeson is following all of this. She joins me live now with a breakdown. You know, I think that it wasn't so much of a surprise, but it was what everybody was waiting for. The big headline, is J.D. going to pull this off, having just been endorsed a few weeks ago by Donald Trump and having, you know, kind of struggled to get noticed in this pack?
You know, and I think you nailed it at the top of the show, Ashley, when you said that this was really going to be a litmus test. Many experts we spoke with said the same thing about whether or not former President Donald Trump was a kingmaker in some of these races. This is going to be something to watch as we head into the weeks ahead. Just talking about, you know, Donald Trump, his connectivity with the voters, not in, only in Ohio, but across the country. You remember, of course, Ashley, he won the presidential election in 2016 and 2020 in Ohio. So it wasn't a big surprise that he has, you know, a groundswell of fans there. But this is going to be monumental. It's going to be something that people are going to be watching moving forward, and they're going to be looking for a Trump endorsement.
What about turnout? Do we know the story yet, or is it too early to really get a feel for turnout and compare it to, you know, 2018 and 2020?
You know, at this point, from the sources that I've been courting with, we have been, it's been pretty much average up to this point, Ashley. That's just preliminary numbers. So we'll get the full picture, the full story later this evening. It does appear the experts that we spoke with earlier today were saying that if there was a massive voter turnout, that would likely predict a big red wave come this November for the midterms. We haven't been seeing that as of right now. Low voter turnout may indicate not as big of a red wave as some Democrats were fearing, but that story is a little bit too early to tell. Right now, it seems like the numbers are pretty in line with previous years.
So, Kelly, you know, I'm always so fascinated by how the voters, you know, look at these guys when they change, right? Like, J.D. Vance was a never-Trumper. And then, you know, on the campaign trail, he was asked about that and kind of did a, oh, gee, I wish I hadn't said that. I certainly have my right to change. And it's called enlightenment. And that's what a lot of politicians do, right? But now that's the primary. Now he's facing Tim Ryan, and he's facing a much larger race where there will be a big attack on his Trumpian, qualities. And so I guess the big question here is he going to be able to spin this win tonight and consolidate all those other Republicans who weren't impressed with his perhaps not as robust Trump credentials as they wished he had? Is he going to be able to spin that into a win, against Tim Ryan in November?
Well, time will tell, but what's been indicated by this election, Ashley, is that he did receive an onslaught of criticism for that. He was heavily attacked by other candidates, Republican candidates, in this race. And his answer to that was, yes, he evolved. And I think former President Donald Trump really connected with him on that star power level as well. Trump also mentioning that he believed he was the man for the job. And so I think in some ways, he's already sort of won that battle on a pretty big stage. We'll have to see if that holds when, again, as you mentioned, the big guns are going to be pulled out in these November midterms.
All right, Kelly Beeson, thanks so much for doing the work right off the top of the show. Appreciate it. Okay, so I'm joined now by an all-star panel of political thinkers because these may be the primaries, but they speak volumes about the next stage in all of these races. Bill Kristol is one of the deans of conservative commentators and currently editor at large of The Bulwark. Chris Steyerwalt is contributing editor of The Dispatch and senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Tara Settmeyer is senior advisor to the Lincoln Project, and Joanna Mosca is a communications consultant and veteran of the Obama White House press office. So welcome to all of you. I'm going to start with you, Bill Kristol, if I can. I suppose this isn't a surprise, seeing how JD did tonight, although it kind of is, because this was what everyone was waiting to see, right? Was Donald Trump going to have the sway that he once had? Would he still have it? Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised, but it is worth noting. I mean, you pointed this out, but just to put a dot on the point you were making. But on February 15th, what's that, 2.5 weeks ago, when Donald Trump endorsed J.D. Vance, J.D. Vance was at 10%. He was at third in the polls. Gibbons and Mandel, who were competing also for Trump's endorsement and for the Trump vote, were 21% each. Trump endorses Vance. It's the same candidate. There are no new themes in the race, really. It's just the Trump endorsement. He goes from 10% to 30%. It's very hard to think of other instances in American recent American politics. Chris Steyerwalt may know one. He knows. He's got good knowledge of all this, that where a one endorsement like that, 2.5 weeks out in a primary, takes a candidate who's lagging, and he hadn't been moving up at all, who's lagging at 10%, takes him to 30% and to a victory.
Yeah, so Chris, Bill just said it, but it wasn't just JD's race. It was a lot of the other races, too. I think last count I saw he was 9 for 9 or something on his endorsements and those who were leading, in tonight's results. So is this sort of now the way it's going to be? Is this how we're going to look at all of the campaigning going forward from this night? Everybody all in if they weren't already?
Well, you can tell what kind of state Ohio is politically, right? It's a blue-collar, working class. The themes that you will hear from J.D. Vance will be the same themes that you will hear from Tim Ryan. They're going to go for the same voters. They're going to talk about the same stuff. They're going to beat up on China. They're going to talk about inflation. And they're going to see which one of them can most closely mirror what voters there think. I will say this, as it relates to Trump's endorsement, Trump chose a propitious time. He got good advice on this one. Trump's made some real boners on some picks this cycle. But this one, the timing was good because the race was starting to consolidate. Gibbons was falling apart. He ran a terrible campaign, had awful debates. Just the bottom fell out. And you had a huge chunk of undecided. And you don't really get to it in a primary until the very, very end. And what Trump did was he got behind the candidate with momentum and rode it to the top. But I also think the two other big stories here is that Mike DeWine is winning so handily in his bid for governor after being on the wrong side of things with Trump, and also Dolan's success with a late surge. If Rob Portman hadn't endorsed Jane Timken, the former state party chairwoman, we might be looking at a different kind of race tonight because Dolan really showed strength in the home stretch.
So, Tara, jump in here on the notion that this is Ohio, okay? And it used to be when I moved to this country 20-some-odd years ago, like 27 years ago, that was the bellwether state. It could go either way, you know. Not anymore. Wow. So should we be talking in these terms, Tara, when we look ahead to other states, other Republican primaries, with regard to the effect that Trump is going to have?
Well, I think we need to be measured on what Trump's effect is, depending on the demographic. To Chris's point, he has made terrible endorsements in the past and where it hasn't worked out so well. I'll be curious to see what happens in Georgia, you know, in the general election where he's endorsed Herschel Walker, or some of these other states where he's endorsed people who may win their primaries, but do not have a chance to win in a general election. It's a whole different ballgame when you're looking at a general electorate winning statewide. So it's clear, though, that the Republican primary has now become the party of Trumpism, that there really is no room for moderates in the party. And this is the example. Now, in Ohio, the economic message is critically important. We heard from J.D. Vance about China, the establishment, jobs, illegal immigration. These are issues that will be repeated over and over again and probably nationalized in a lot of the races when you come to the general election, because this is what the Republican Party wants to run on. How that works out once they get to a general, I don't know that all these other candidates can make that shift the way that J.D. Vance has. I mean, it's very interesting the type of candidate he is. He became everything he despised in 2016. And even though he was attacked for that in the primary, I hope that Tim Ryan's campaign can zero in on what does the America First agenda actually mean? Who is J.D. Vance actually? Is he the guy in 2016 or is he the guy now that'll say or do anything to get elected? I'm hoping that Tim Ryan can tell that story because I think it's an important one when someone is as hypocritical as J.D. Vance has been in his political career.
Okay, so Joanna, will they even need to tell that story or will it be all about the elephant in the room, which is what just happened last night, that, you know, that pesky memo that got leaked from the Supreme Court? Like, is this going to be a race all about, you know, the electorate needs to deal with abortion now as opposed to, you know, the third branch of government? Or are we going to be picking apart all the different things about different candidates and where they've fallen on different issues at different times?
I think this campaign is going to be about the economy. And just echoing what Tara was saying, I don't know that this was actually that big of a risk for Trump. I mean, Mandel was not a perfect candidate by any means. He had announced a divorce from his wife and mother of three children as he was gearing up for the race. J.D. Vance is so far from a perfect candidate. So, you know, the interesting thing, I read Hillbilly Elegy, and I grew up in a town much like that, Galesburg, Illinois, and I responded to it in a way where I agreed with him in so many of our shared experiences, and then I have a very different policy prescription. And I thought, you know, here's a candidate who could have heart when he ran the first time. I don't think that anymore. I mean, he's shown that he is a chameleon, and he's going to be whoever Donald Trump tells him to be. And I have to say, if a Democrat had thanked a child of a Biden on stage at a primary election, I think everyone would be outraged. So a couple things he said. Yes, he talked about some issues, but I don't think anybody needs to hear about his Tums. And I do think we need to hear where he actually stands on the issues. And it's going to be one of those things that you can't waffle anymore, because Tim Ryan has actually been working on these economic issues for a long time, and he's going to hold his feet to the fire.
All right, Joanna Maska, thank you so much. Bill Kristol, Chris Starr, Walton, Tara Settmeyer, thank you all for being here on this very important night. The season's just beginning, so I'll see more of you guys soon, I hope.
Yes, looking forward to it.
All right. So coming up, for the first time in 50 years, I just mentioned it, it seems that the imminent, it seems imminent at least, that the Supreme Court is about to take away the federal protection of a woman's right to have an abortion. And also imminent, those midterm elections. So will this expected action from the conservative majority on the Supreme Court cost fellow conservatives at the ballot box? And is that expected Republican sweep now in peril? That's next. When I was six, I had a couple of favorite songs. Freebird, Hooked on a Feeling, Taking Care of Business, BTO, and Midnight at the Oasis. That's a long time ago, right? I mean, the top movies at the box office that year were The Exorcist, A Paper Moon, and The Sting. And that was also the year that the Supreme Court guaranteed every woman in America the right to have an abortion with Roe versus Wade. And Roe survived a big challenge, too, back in 1992 with Planned Parenthood versus Casey. But this coming June, when the court releases its decisions and opinions, hold on to your hat. Because that leaked decision that everybody's talking about, you know, the one that the justices are circulating and discussing right now? If that decision is the final decision, Roe and Casey and a woman's right to have an abortion anywhere in this country, well, all that goes away. Most people think abortion is a 50-50 issue in this country. Those for the right to have one and those against it. But it is not. It is not 50-50. It's far from it, actually. The numbers are as wily as the people who are asking the questions. And depending on what news network you're watching, the numbers aren't necessarily the exact picture of what Americans want and what they don't. So tonight, I want to run some of the numbers for you without a left-wing or a right-wing prism. When Americans were asked if they were pro-life or pro-choice, the numbers were pretty even. 49% pro-choice and 47% pro-life. We had 4% in that little sliver there that was undecided as well. But given a little more detail in the question, the numbers change dramatically. When asked if abortion should be outlawed, no matter what the circumstance, only 19% of those asked agreed. And when asked if abortion should be legal in all circumstances, no restrictions, 32% agreed. And finally, when a little bit more measured and asked if abortion should be legal only under certain circumstances, a whopping 48% of Americans agreed. Ah, yes, and then it comes to those words, certain circumstances. Those can also really skew the numbers, too, because some people's opinion of abortion depends on the trimester that the woman is in. And others believe that abortion should only be allowed in the case of rape or incest or, of course, when the mother's health is at risk. But if you just add up all the numbers, roughly 80% of Americans believe that abortion should be legal in at least some circumstances. And that's why there has been a tidal wave of reaction to the leaked Supreme Court opinion and decision about overturning Roe versus Wade. Even though that opinion is just a draft, it is not yet final. For more, I want to turn to News Nation Washington correspondent Kelly Meyer, who's standing by. Kelly, this leak is, you know, it's earth-shattering in itself, just the leak from Supreme Court. It's never happened before. And it's got the Chief Justice mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. He wants an investigation because, like, make no mistake, there are political motivations potentially here. The legitimacy of the court is at stake. So walk me through what's happening at the High Court right now.
Well, that's right. This leak is shaking up the Supreme Court. You know, two law professors I spoke with today basically saying this leak is going to leave a stain on the Supreme Court and that it's going to be harder to change the decision now that this leak is out. As you mentioned, Chief Justice John Roberts saying today that this is authentic, but he is also saying that this is a draft and this could still change. Here's a recap of how we got here.
Tonight, a Supreme Court bombshell confirmed. Chief Justice John Roberts saying in a statement a leak of the draft abortion ruling is real, writing, although the document described in yesterday's report is authentic, it does not represent a decision by the court or the final position of any member on the issues in the case. His comments come after the stunning leak of a draft opinion obtained by Politico, revealing the conservative majority is moving towards striking down the landmark Roe versus Wade decision, a 50-year-old Supreme Court ruling that gave women the right to have an abortion. In the 98-page decision written by Justice Samuel Alito, Alito says, quote, Roe was egregiously wrong from the start. In the document labeled as the, quote, opinion of the court, Alito writes, quote, we hold that Roe and Casey must be overruled. Casey versus Planned Parenthood is the 1992 case that reaffirmed Roe. Alito added it is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elective representatives. Justices Thomas, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett voted with Alito after oral arguments this past December. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett all confirmed under former President Donald Trump. President Joe Biden's pick for the Supreme Court, Ketanji Brown Jackson, isn't involved in this decision. She won't take the bench until Justice Stephen Breyer steps down this summer. The draft circulated in early February among justices and clerks could change, but the impact of the initial opinion is already sending shockwaves across the court and the country.
And Ashley, bringing it back here to the White House, President Biden calling this potential decision, quote, radical, and he's using this as a rallying cry for the 2022 midterms. Ashley?
Okay, so that is my next question. All these people who are so upset, is it a rallying cry? Is it anger? I mean, there's a difference, right? There are people who are genuinely upset over what this decision could portend, right? And then there are the others who say this is a great opportunity to really gin up the Democratic base for the midterms. And how much of each is out there?
I think it's a bit of both, really, and a cause and effect. You know, we were outside the Supreme Court last night when this news broke, and today, and you are seeing people out there frustrated, angry, sad. They're seeing their biggest fear realized if the Supreme Court overturns this 1973 decision. But that's also pushing them to the polls. It's fueling them for these midterms. We're already seeing some Democratic governors saying that elections matter, not only on the national level, but on the local level, because it's there where you're going to see the decision be made. If this is overturned, it's going to be up to those states whether or not a woman has the right to have an abortion. Ashley?
Kelly Meyer, thank you for that live report tonight. Appreciate that from the White House. And of course, all of this is going down as Indiana and Ohio hit the polls today in various primaries, not to mention the midterm elections just around the corner. So talk about a scramble for candidates who barely had time to craft a response. Whew. Republican Jennifer Ruth Green, running for Congress in Indiana, here's what she told News Nation this morning.
I'm 100% pro-life, all the way. But I do believe that this leak of the specifics of this decision that are not finalized, you know, as we reported or as you reported earlier today, it's just a clear attack on our democracy. And the difficulty of trying to influence the Supreme Court with public opinion is a struggle for me. And so I think the real danger in releasing that is present currently. But I am looking forward to and optimistic that the Supreme Court would overturn Roe versus Wade and return essentially the decision to the states to allow their elected representatives to choose and make a decision about what they want to do.
For more, I want to bring in News Nation correspondent Evan Lambert, who's standing by at the very noisy Supreme Court. So, Evan, talk to me about this whole notion of the court's leaked decision, how it's going to play, you know, a huge role in the upcoming primaries and the midterms.
Well, Ashley, of course, candidates will be asked about this. An expert telling News Nation tonight, though, that this bombshell development may not necessarily change the headwinds that typically favor Republicans at the midterms when Democrats are in control, but certainly it could drive people like these protesting at this building tonight to the polls.
With one side enraged and the other celebrating.
Roe v. Wade is going down!
The Supreme Court's draft ruling, which suggests the downfall of the landmark abortion case Roe versus Wade, experts telling News Nation the divisive issue hangs heavy over November's midterm elections. In the first moments after Politico's report leaked the draft opinion striking down the constitutional right to an abortion, Democrats sought to galvanize their voters.
The elections this November will have consequences because the rights of 100 million women are now on the ballot. To help fight this court's awful decision, I urge every American to make their voices heard this week and this year.
Meanwhile, Republicans in Congress who overwhelmingly support the likely outcome banning abortion spoke not about the substance, but the leak itself.
I think the story today is an effort by someone on the inside to discredit the institution.
Kyle Condick, managing editor of the University of Virginia's Sabato's Crystal Ball, says anger over the decision could help drive Democrats or swing voters to the polls.
You know, maybe if you were a Democrat in Illinois and you maybe don't like the governor there for one reason or the other, you're thinking of voting Republican, but maybe this decision sort of pushes you back into your corner.
Hanging in the balance, the control of the House and the Senate, which Democrats hold on to by the slimmest of margins with Vice President Kamala Harris's tie-breaking vote, not to mention the 36 governors up for election on the ballot in November 2022. But the issue of abortion has historically energized Republican voters, too.
I don't know if it necessarily would change the sort of overall expectation for the midterm, which is that I think it continues to look like a pretty Republican-leaning year. But it is a wild card that I think we've all been thinking about for months, really.
And Ashley, this is already having a big impact on fundraising. An election researcher who has been watching this says Act Blue, the website that is raising money for Democrats, has raised $10 million in just 24 hours. Ashley.
Okay, I know this question is going to be really hard to answer, so I understand it if it can't be answered by you or anybody else, but that is that this draft was from back in February, and everybody knows the way it works, right? The justices circulate these drafts, they cajole one another, they discuss, sometimes they change their minds, sometimes they tweak things, they take things out. Things can change, you know, from February to June when they normally publish, but what's the talk of that town there about what came out in this leak that was crafted in February as to how much it could actually change by June?
Well, as you just said, it is very much at this point a work in progress, and this is part of the normal process. We don't see it this early, obviously, this coming with this leak. But the people that have been out here for the last 24 hours in front of the Supreme Court today, a crowd as big as a few thousand people that were out here about now. There's just maybe a few hundred, but the majority of them are supporting abortion access, and their chants reflect that. But there really is no telling exactly what might happen between now and when that final decision is announced.
All right, Evan Lambert, thank you. On the steps of the Supreme Court, I can see it's all gated off behind you, so that's why we can't see the protesters, but we can hear them. We know they're there. Evan, thank you for that. Once the ground stops shaking, you can expect a lot of people to take to the mic and weigh in on the impact of this impending decision by the Supreme Court and what it's going to mean for women across the country and men, too. After all, men have a say in this debate, right? Because they have to pay for half the cost of raising a baby for two decades, or they certainly should anyway. One voice that's been prominent in reproductive rights is Ricky Lake. You might know her from her eponymous talk show back in the 1990s, but Ricky has been hard at work producing documentaries that educate women and men about reproductive health and choices in giving birth. And her latest project is called The Business of Birth Control. And one Ricky Lake is going to join me live right after the break. If you were one of those millions and millions of people who watched Ricky Lake's talk show back in the 90s, you know that she's got a lot to say about a lot of stuff.
But lately, she's been honing her message to reproductive health. And wow, what a guest tonight. Because all of a sudden, reproductive issues are top of the news. And so Ricky Lake joins me live, along with her producing partner, Abby Epstein. Thank you, ladies, for being here. I'm just going to jump right in and get your reaction to this, you know, leaked decision and opinion by Sam Alito on the Supreme Court that Roe v. Wade is kind of done for, if that's going to be the decision that actually is published in June, Ricky.
It's shocking. Thank you for having us. I mean, we started making this documentary, The Business of Birth Control, back in 2014. And did I ever think that the climate would be what it is right now when we release this film? Our focus is on access to birth control, the history of the pill and these hormonal birth controls and what they're due to women. But it is tied into to the abortion rights and what's being taken away from women. We want to educate women and empower them with information when it comes to their health.
So here's the thing. For as long as I've been in this country, over a quarter of a century, I've never really heard abortion as a big deal, right? Because everybody just figures it's the settled law of the land, even in 92, right, with Casey as the challenge. Nobody really said, I'm going to the ballot box because of the abortion issue. And if you ask people, around 2% think that that's important enough to vote on. So now this happened. Right. And now it's going to possibly end up being a ballot issue, because the only way, you know, to get a legal abortion in some of these states will be through law, you know, not through the protections from the Supreme Court. So what do you think is going to happen, Ricky, to the issue of abortion when it comes to campaigning and voting?
I mean, I think it has to be ahead of almost all else at this point. You know, our whole autonomy to be able to choose when and if we want to bring a child into the world is on the line. And I think we all need to join forces. I mean, Abby and I plan to get involved with all different organizations to lend our name, show our support, but we have to fight to make sure that what was instilled in law back in the 70s stays true today for women and our daughters, our grandchildren. We have no choice.
Yeah. Abby, jump in here with this whole notion of the documentary. It made me think, how important is the pill all of a sudden going to be in the national conversation all of a sudden? If people start to freak out that if you get pregnant, that's your lot in life. Are you all of a sudden thinking our documentary is going to be really important because people are going to take a second look and really start focusing on the pill?
You know, I really hope not, Ashley, because I just feel like focusing on making sure women are on birth control, it just puts more of an unfair burden on women. And I really feel like this has got to cross gender lines. You know, this should not all be on women to be on birth control, to, you know, bear the repercussions of an unplanned pregnancy. I love this quote. I don't know who to attribute it to, but she said, every unplanned pregnancy is actually the fault of a man who didn't wear a condom. And that's exactly what it is. And I really feel that, you know, it's time to kind of look at reproductive justice from all angles. And, you know,
maybe a federal law that mandates, you know, child support for men. Because if you are forced to bring a baby into the world, then the other half of that plan should maybe be forced federally to pay for it. What do you think, Ricky?
Absolutely. 100%. Yes. I mean, a man can get a woman pregnant every single day of the year, multiple times a day. Women can only get pregnant 4 or 5 days out of the month. So yeah, there is just this unfair, it just seems to fall on the women, and we have to change that.
Yeah. So, but generally speaking, Ricky, I mean, I remember watching you so often. You really had your finger on the pulse of the nation. I don't know if the nation has, you know, completely turned upside down since your talk show days, but do you think that Americans will now really look at the abortion issue like they did back in the 60s and 70s? Are they going to bring it to the forefront, do you think, when it comes to how they decide to vote?
I mean, that remains to be seen. I am not someone who's political, overtly political. You know, I'm someone who has my own opinion and my own experience. I know from the making of my first film, Abby and I did The Business of Being Born 14 years ago, and we now are just written up in a medical journal of the impact of our little movie, of what it's had on women looking, seeking out of hospital birth and midwifery care. So I do think that we have an opportunity with our little film to educate the masses about their options and to know that women need to advocate for themselves and fight for more more options. And that's what our hope is with our film and with this abortion, you know, bill. I mean, I shudder to think what this country is going to look like if we don't have access to safe and legal abortions in this country.
Well, it's just an interesting time right now. Again, it's all about June to see if that published report mirrors what we saw, you know, crafted in the leak in February. Hey, Abby Epstein and Ricky Lake, thank you so much. I hope to have you on a few more times as we continue to navigate this issue. And I don't know how you still look 25 years old, Ricky Lake, but we have to talk at some point about that. Thanks, guys.